Turns out he's a major cinephile.
They don't watch enough movies! It's a very simple formula!
And here we go.
Hello there. Welcome to episode 6. With the whopping season 11 of Archer dropping this Wednesday, it got me thinking, folks, about adult animated shows. We love them, we're offended by them, we watch them. With how much I've been watching Big Mouth on Netflix, Rick and Morty on HBO Max, I figured we would take this episode to dive in a bit to see how adult animation got started, how it grew to what it is today, and maybe enlighten you listeners on something you're missing out on. We decided to double down on guest 2. We have our second guest and second Red Fox for life, it's John Mosho. John, how you doing, man?
What's up, Nick? How are you doing? Happy to be here.
Good, man. I'm doing good. It's another episode, Nick Nack Goes to the Movies. Gotta love it.
It's my first appearance, so we're going to make it great.
Now, we know you're a podcast pro. Some podcast aficionados there may know you from your soccer speak or your Fortnite speak. But for the people who don't know you, let's get to know you a little bit. So you may have to go back, think back a little bit. What was the last movie that you saw in actual theaters?
Oof, man. So this has got to be obviously pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. With a big moviegoer, for those who are not aware, active AMC A-lister supporter. We're probably going 2 times a week. So I think the last movie I saw, if I'm going back, was actually an animation movie, funnily enough. I saw Onward. Great cast. Tom Holland, Chris Pratt, Julia Dreyfus. That was probably in theaters for like a week before all of this world happened, but it was definitely worthwhile to see in theaters, and it was good. I liked it a lot.
I didn't realize anyone actually saw that movie in theaters, because I don't know if it, like, for me it was Birds of Prey, and that was like around the March window, so I didn't know people could see Onward unless you were like movie review people until it was on Disney Plus. So that's wild that you actually got to see that in theaters.
Yeah, dude, there were a couple movies that right at the very end I was able to sneak in. There's that Invisible Man, mm-hmm. the one that came out that I think went released on Amazon Video, if I'm not mistaken.
It was surprisingly good. Surprisingly.
Yeah, that I really enjoyed too. And I even saw The Way Back, which was a cliche sports movie, but it had its moments too. That's now definitely on HBO Max. So I was able to sneak a couple of those now, just like quote-unquote digital releases, as able to see in theaters, which is always sweet.
So as you're a big movie watcher, even if we haven't been to theaters, I'm sure you've been working on your watch list, finding new things to watch. So what is the either most recent thing you watched or something that you are currently watching?
Yeah, so it's weird. It's actually very strange. I don't know. I love the element of going to the movies, like, and going to the theater to watch movies. But when I'm at home, it's tougher for me to sit down and like spend those 2.5 hours to get super engaged in that world. So during this whole quarantine process, I've kind of transitioned more to TV. Mm-hmm. So lately I just started, because of your last episode, I just started The Boys, because I really want to listen to that new podcast. So I want to get through the first season of that, and it's been terrific so far. I'm also watching currently Dark, the Netflix show that they just released their third season, all in German, but really trippy, really weird, very cool. And then for purposes of this conversation, that makes it great. HBO Max just got all of the rights to South Park. So I'm cranking through South Park right now. And man, it's a great show. It's really, really good. So a lot on the docket, but it's all been enjoyable. How about yourself?
Yeah, man. You know, it's always good to have a little bit of time to keep track of your watch list. It gets too bulked up sometimes. It feels like you have to get through a year's worth of stuff in 3 months in the summer. But for me, it's funny. I've actually never seen Dark, but I did take German. Not that I would be any at all proficient in it, but I feel like sometimes you got to dig deep for those like movies that if it's really good, you'll live with. I don't like reading my movies a lot. I don't know if you ever heard or saw Train to Busan, a South Korean zombie movie. It's phenomenal. Highly recommend it. But as far as what I've been watching recently, for me, the big thing was I really wanted to get through, start and finish the Harley Quinn show on HBO Max and DC Universe, because I wanted to make sure it wasn't like something that I definitely wanted to talk about for this, which obviously it ended up being, but we'll get to it. But that was sort of the big one for me. That I'm just trying to keep up on live-ish stuff, like Hard Knocks has been phenomenal. like seeing how they deal with, like, it's almost the most realistic COVID-ish show because like that's part of the story of how they deal with training camp during it, but also filming a show.
Yeah, that show too. I've actually been keeping up with that as well. I was amazed, and I actually hope it wins awards at the first episode of the season. I really was concerned when they said they were going to be doing the Chargers and the Rams because it's just two teams. You don't get as much of a feel for who the individual athletes are. But for this COVID situation where you really can't do those one-on-ones that I think people love so much that show more of the characters of the players because you can't follow them home. It's just too risky for the camera people and the athletes. But to actually see how NFL organization is going through the process of dealing with COVID, it's just fascinating to watch. It's really cool stuff. Definitely recommend.
And they found a way to put Zoom calls like on broadcast TV, which I thought was a unique filming. We're both film sports people. So seeing like those little things is interesting to us. I mean, seeing Brett Favre on a Zoom call was an interesting, you know, who would have thought, right?
Who would have thought he even knew how to work a computer, let alone be able to do a Zoom call? So I'm impressed.
He's still doing it. He's Wrangler jeans quarterback and Zoom aficionado, apparently. Just so you guys know, we do a little homework to get you guys. You know, it's a fun show, and we want to give you guys a friendly, you know, to watch list or maybe to avoid list. But like to inform you guys, obviously, as well. Just so you guys know, the genre really kind of came into existence with The Simpsons as one of the six shows that was in the pre-90s window for starting. It's the only really one that took off and had success with an unbelievable 31 seasons and nearly 700 episodes to its name. Its 32nd season will kick off later this month. I know for a fact it's not my cup of tea. John and I talked before this. It's not something he's into either. But in my household, you know, we weren't allowed to watch Simpsons, and I'm sure that was the case with you too, right?
Simpsons was pretty cool with my parents compared to like Family Guy and shows of that nature. I just think there was like a history, and my parents honestly probably didn't know enough about The Simpsons that they were like, you know what, that's fine to watch. It just, for me, never caught my eye, never caught my interest. I think Simpsons really probably was hitting its peak in the early 2000s. And for me, just with my TV watching, early 2000s, I was still on Nickelodeon. I was still on like Cartoon Network. I'm a 24-year-old young man. It just never was in the prominent best stages while I was of age, and now when I go back and watch it, I just think the animation style is so drawn out and kind of old that it's never really piqued my interest as much. I can see how it really helped define the genre of animation or just the category, and it's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the right thing. You know, my thing is, I think it was just too long in the tooth for you and I to really grasp the quality elements of it. I will say the Treehouse of Horror episodes, I definitely, not that I actively ever sought The Simpsons out, but I definitely remember watching a few of those in like school, like in like seventh or eighth grade, like for, I don't know if like they'd be on in like the cafeteria or like in some random like class. I don't know, but I remember them being available to me, which are cool, and I appreciate that, but I never really felt the need to seek it out. And just like The Simpsons, you know, the 90s were the real boom for the genre with things like Beavis and Butthead, King of the Hill, the start of the massively popular and controversial show South Park, which I know that you will absolutely go to town talking about. Something that I definitely want to hear from you, especially because you definitely have more of that viewpoint on South Park than I do. Family Guy, which is something I definitely want to talk about. Futurama, which I also quite like. I feel like Futurama gets sort of not as much praise. I don't know if it's because it came out in a little bit of a peak time, or it's always thought of as maybe like in the same way American Dad and Family Guy are thought of. One's like the always the second tier to the other one. Let's dive into some of these greats. First off, did you ever get into either Beavis and Butthead or King of the Hill? I know I never did. They were never really something brought up except maybe a Fox commercial for King of the Hill. And I don't even think I had MTV when Beavis and Butthead was going on. So definitely was not really a noticeable thing for me.
Yeah, no, I'm on the same boat. I mean, I think both were super influential, especially as you start seeing shows like Family Guy go in that direction of crude. But no, I never really had any interest in either of those shows. King of the Hill is actually one that eventually someday I would probably give a chance. It's not like at the top of my list, but no, I don't really have that much experience with either of those, unfortunately.
Kind of going to the ones that we do know now, right? I mean, you had a Zoom background from South Park before we started. It's your moment to shine, John. I'll let you take the reins on talking about South Park, and let's go a little in depth, right? When did you first get into it? Why do you love it so much? And as you've been with the show for a bit, how have you seen the show change over time?
Yeah, dude. I mean, South Park in general is just incredible. It is so good. So I think it's something that every young kid starts out watching at like a pretty young age before they're supposed to, or they try to like prevent their parents from seeing them watching it because they know they're not supposed to be watching it, but they know everything about it's great because you have the stupid Mr. Hanky Poop jokes, but you also just have some really incredibly dumb but risky jokes that just make it absolutely incredible, from Saddam Hussein portrayed as a gay man that's dating the devil, to Mr. Garrison becoming a woman, to even in today's day and age with PC principal just yelling at everybody for everything they do wrong. South Park has just always pushed the limits on what you can show on TV. They do it time and time again. They get into feuds with so many actors, so many celebrities, so many groups, even religions. So like, I can definitely see how people have a large disdain towards them, but they always make really, I don't want to say like intellectual points on the current culture and the state of our society, but they always are bringing up really hot button tickets and finding a way to just bring it to light, bring dumb humor out of it, and just, I don't know, they do, Matt Parker and Trey Stone, they really do something incredible when it comes to that show. And there's a reason why. I think 23 seasons later, the show really hasn't had a moment where it's become incredibly, incredibly dull, where I think sometimes like Simpsons has gone on way too long and they don't know what to do with it. Even now with South Park, they're doing like season-long arcs rather than individual episodes, and I think it's been a terrific transition. Everything about it's been really cool, and you love seeing what's happening in everyday life happen instantaneously because the way they edit things. South Park's just terrific, man.
It's funny you talk about the Sarah thing, because I remember when that first happened, people were very against it, like that first season going into that more serialized format. So I haven't, you know, really actively watched it, but I have. It's interesting to hear you say that it hasn't been a boon to the creativeness and the joy that you've had watching South Park.
No, I honestly think it's made it a little better. Like, you literally see what's happening in the political climate of today's day and age, and they find a way to make humor within a week, because that's how they edit it. It's literally, they sit in a room on like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, crank out something that's really good really quickly, and then spin it around and get it on TV for the following week. So it's very culturally relevant, and it's incredible, especially during the whole presidential election, when like Trump was doing things, they made Mr. Garrison into President Trump, and everything that was happening in live time was happening with Mr. Garrison, and it was just really, really well executed. So I've really enjoyed the season arcs. I hope they continue doing that.
Yeah, I mean, and as I kind of talk on my own experience with South Park, I never really actively felt the need to watch it, but like if I was at a friend's house or friend's, you know, dorm room, whatever, and like it was on, like I'd sit and watch it, and I can appreciate it for what it is. Like you said, the crazy quick turnaround time to make, you know, really poignant, timely episodes. It's a very unique animation style, obviously. And with so many animated shows out now, still seeing something like that is so different and interesting. And you got to appreciate that to some degree. And obviously there's some super memorable episodes. You know, I'm sure you have some as I do. I mean, you know, the ones that come to mind immediately are the Guitar Hero one, obviously, the World of Warcraft one.
One of the best episodes.
I'm not probably speaking like wild things here. Like, these are episodes people definitely know about. Obviously, the Purity Ring episode with the Jonas Brothers, the Fish Sticks joke with Kanye West. Like, those are just ones that, you know, percolate in my mind. Even if a show that I don't actively seek out, I still think of those episodes like immediately when I was seeing this episode. It's like, oh, you know, I watched those years and years ago and I still think of them. You know, I love the pop culture episodes, obviously. I guess, well, I think you kind of allude to the crass humor sometimes isn't my, like, if you'd say things that you need to make an adult animated show, there's like four tiers that I'll get into eventually, and crass humor is kind of the one that is kind of my least interesting or would at least pull me in. And as well as South Park can be super clever and poignant, sometimes the crass outweighs that. And it's a flip of the coin for me, even though I appreciate, you know, and maybe this is offensive to The Simpsons, like I appreciate what South Park did for the genre more than what Simpsons did.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement too. And I know you've discussed it a little bit, and we may even talk about it some more, but just to transition us to a different show with like Family Guy. I know that's a show that you said you really like and have a lot of respect for, but I view that as being a little bit more crass at a lot of points. I mean, it's definitely not as like poop jokey, but it's definitely like making fun of celebrities, calling people out, just a lot of drinking humor. I definitely wouldn't call it the cleanest of shows. So like, how come that to you speaks more than South Park?
Sure. So for starters, obviously, Family Guy is, I would say, considered the crown jewel of the Seth MacFarlane animated conglomerate of shows, be it, you know, tied into American Dad and the Cleveland Show. So I love Family Guy. It's on to its 19th season. There are some amazing musical episodes. The theater kid, Nick, loves all the singing they get up to. And obviously, the thing they're most known for is their, you know, weird, quirky cutaway gags that are odd. They're unique, they're very like specifically pop culture, and like a lot of times, and kind of like Archer, like I don't get the reference. Like you have to look up the reference in Archer for sure a lot of the time, and in Family Guy sometimes you have to. It may not be the most clever or deep humor. I love the obscure references, and I feel like the air quote dumb humor is somehow classier and more consumable for me than South Park. Not that South Park to me is more poignant, but I think I'd rather watch Family Guy with the weird quirky things and live with the like drinking bar humor, which to me is fine, versus like poop jokes on Family Guy. And the Star Wars episodes were amazing.
I mean, the Star Wars episodes are amazing. I completely agree with that. My issue with Family Guy compared to perhaps like a South Park or even some other great animation shows that we'll talk about later is just, I feel like with South Park, even though they make dumb humor and like their jokes are about poop, when their jokes are about poop, it's for the plot point. Like it always expands upon the plot point. And sometimes the plot point can be really freaking stupid. Like it can be Mr. Hanky the Christmas Poo needs to save Christmas. Mm-hmm. That is a ridiculous plot point. Yep. But you're following the story of this poop trying to save Christmas. Versus in Family Guy, where you find a lot of, for the lack of better term, dumb style humor that's incredible and great. But I feel like it's a lot of cutaway gags. It's a lot of, we're going to launch 700 jokes at you in one episode and two of them are going to make you belly laugh, and 698 of them are going to make you go, that exists. Okay, that's a joke. That happened. And then you kind of just move on. It's actually pretty similar. It's not an animation show, but I associate a lot with Tina Fey show on Netflix, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, mm-hmm. where both of them, they just pound you with jokes, like right and left. And you're always going to leave like, you know what? Like, that was pretty good. I'm smiling. But you're never going to be, in my personal opinion, like, except for the rare occasions, like you mentioned, the Star Wars episode was great. The Shaboopy episode early on of Family Guy, I find terrific. Mm-hmm. But like overall, like I usually don't leave and I'm just like, wow, like that episode, that changed me. Like that was a really good episode.
It's funny. I actually think the most changeable episode is one of the least like funny episodes. It's like Stewie's in therapy and it's like one of the more like emotionally deep resounding episodes, and it's very like small in scale and almost focuses solely on Stewie. It's some great insight, and I won't spoil anything, but it's like an episode that really isn't funny and is really not at all the same format is probably like an episode that you actually like felt. He makes a bunch of other shows. American Dad is still in its run. You know, I definitely watch American Dad still. Like, now that I'm all caught up on Hulu, I can kind of keep up with it, you know, kind of semi-weekly on TBS. It's clearly second fiddle. It's an animated show in the same style, but there is no cutaway gags. And I miss the cutaway gags. It has grown on me. You know, like, I think I used to be like, well, why would I watch American Dad? I just watch Family Guy and call it a day. I think Roger is great. Like, if there's one thing on American Dad that you can hang your hat on, it's the weird recurring joke of an alien who dresses in different outfits, and sometimes people recognize him and sometimes people don't. And like, they'll go to a place and he'll be two characters at the same time. Like, I just watched an episode and he was like a duck. He's like, no, I'm doing duck stuff today. And like, after 10 and 11 seasons, however many they're on, like, you'd think it would get old, but it like hasn't for me. I don't know. I think the Cleveland Show short run, it was fun. feels like a fleeting memory, right? Gone with the Wind. It was fun, and I kind of liked the family dynamic a lot, potentially maybe more in that show at times. But I think the friend characters were like super lazily came up with. But what is your take?
I just think Seth MacFarlane is obviously the very traditional approach with all of his animation styles. It's centered around that ideal traditional family, where a lot of anime shows are set up like that, even with different creators, with like Bob's Burgers and the new Amy Poehler show that's not coming to mind. A lot of animation is set up centered around a family and just their crazy shenanigans that they get into. And ultimately, they all end up loving each other, or ultimately something crazy happens. And the reason why for me, I haven't said this yet, but I really think I enjoy American Dad more than Family Guy is just because you do get those crazy, all the families in it together, shenanigans, and the plot point just keeps rolling. I'm a less of a fan of when things are choppy and they break up like Family Guy does a little bit. I like to follow along the storyline. I like to follow along the plot. And I think American Dad does a really good job with that. And I agree that I think the character building in that show is better than Cleveland Show, where you got just one hick dude and an actual lazy grizzly bear,
yeah.
Which was just kind of weird. Just never really made sense to me. I appreciate their effort to try to make a Cleveland Show, because I think
there are moments that were cool.
Yeah, there are moments for sure. The little brother from the Cleveland Show.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rilo. Yeah. I liked him a lot. Yeah, that show never really got it. Overall, I think Seth MacFarlane deserves his props. I think he's a witty, funny dude, but it's just not a show that I think I could commit to watching for 17, 18 seasons. I actually have no idea how many seasons of Family Guy there are, but I think there are a lot of people that would probably agree with that, where you're more likely to just watch a spot episode on TBS.
Well, I will say before we get into the next one, and I mentioned this on our second episode, the Emmys episode, that this is a year where there is no, the major animation awards do not have a Seth MacFarlane show in there. Part of that is because, not because Simpsons has a dominion over the genre, but because there are so many up and coming unique creative shows in that genre, which we will talk about. I'm going to go to a show that I'm actually surprised, you know, we were talking that you said you also were interested in, because it's a show that I don't think gets a lot of love, and so things are a little weird. I quite like Futurama, which I feel like, you know, it had its time in the spotlight, its praise, but somehow always gets lumped into the, like, right below the mainstays of the genre. Like, people know about Futurama, but for some reason it's kind of like a second tier show. So I love the show, but since you also appreciate it for what it is, I'll let you give the first stab at Futurama.
Futurama is the most, like, niche clicky show ever. It just, like, it has its followers, and if you like this show, you are part of that fan group, and that is it. Like, there's very few people that love it, but those who do, it's their favorite show. It's very excellently done. It's really, really smart, sophisticated humor, while also having a couple of really dumb characters to add a lot of fun to it, like Bender and Fry. But it also really has a great ability, even though it's not a family show, it kind of has a family-oriented team of people that all spend all their time together. They all hang out together. They go on crazy adventures together. And there's some awesome, awesome scientific things that they do in it. It's very sci-fi oriented. They actually, there's a theorem that the mad scientists of the Harlem Globetrotters in the future created just for an episode of the show. That's an actual math theorem in real life now. It's called the Futurama theorem. If you don't know it, check it out. But it just does such a cool job having these really crazy, weird sci-fi characters, these just fascinating robots, an evil overlord and mom, and even it can pull on the heartstrings too. One of my favorite episodes is the side adventure of Hermes and Bender, where they're trying to find out who Inspector Number 5 is. I believe it's in the 6th season of the show. If you haven't watched it, highly recommend it. Even if you don't know a ton about the characters, you can really get a feel of how much these characters do care for each other. I don't know. I just think it's terrific.
Well, and maybe that's why it didn't get, like, the mainstay admiration of other shows, because a lot of those other shows you reference are family shows, right? They're clear-cut families, where this is sort of a group of people who either don't have a family. There's a whole thing about trying to find leadless parents, in which you eventually, like, meet, but that takes a chunk of time. And it's almost sort of the, with Shazam, your family is who you're with, not, like, who, like, made you kind of thing. Futurama is like kind of hard. Like, there's only 7 seasons, 4 movies, but it feels like to me, even though there's less of it, like I feel more, and I haven't watched Futurama in years, but I feel more attached to some of the characters in Futurama than anything we've talked about before. I may have to amend my top 10 list at the end.
Yeah, I think you got to dive back into it a little bit, because it really, the reason why I personally think it didn't have as much of a following is it never really found its home. It was on like Fox, I believe, for like 4 years. And then Fox canceled it, and then Comedy Central picked it up. And so then Comedy Central did a couple of seasons with it, and then it ended. And I feel like it's one of those shows that if you were to toss this on Netflix, kind of like what they just did with Community, and nobody really watched Community at the time, but then it was tossed onto Netflix, and everyone was like, oh my God, this is a really good show. Like, I feel like Futurama is in one of those situations. If you put that on Netflix, I think it would find a bigger niche all of a sudden once again, and people will be like, wow, like Futurama exists. This is a really cool show. So Netflix executives, if you're listening to Nick Nack Goes to the Movies,
which they
buy the right Futurama, which they definitely
they
are.
Definitely
buy
are.
The right Futurama.
Da-dum, right? That's the Netflix sound. Da-dum. If they want to sample that, it's all fine. And it's funny you say that. I remember when I like got into Futurama, I think it was on Netflix.
Yeah, way back in the day.
That was my same thing as Family Guy. I kind of watched bits and pieces of it, but Netflix was when I like went off and saw everything. And the movies actually, I think, came out in one of those weird times when they didn't have a home. That's when those movies were coming out to fill the gap and put something out. And, you know, it's the same creator of The Simpsons and Matt Groening.
Legend. You know, in animation, absolutely.
And you know, I'm not so controversial here, but like, look, I like Futurama more than The Simpsons. You know, I love the sci-fi. You know, it's adult comedy in a sci-fi world that it's something that like it doesn't really exist. You know, like think of how long between Futurama and Rick and Morty, right? I think of Futurama and Rick and Morty as a very like clear, specific, like weird sci-fi-y world that has some pretty like adult themes. And I think, you know, it's super dark humor, like darker humor than a lot of shows, you know, on this list. And then like, unlike BoJack, where they're so like clearly depressed talking about dark things, Futurama almost makes these really dark themes in like really like light and like a levity almost to it, which is so strange and so compelling. Bender, which is like one of the best characters, I mean, a swearing, stealing, drinking robot, I mean, that's phenomenal. You know, it's funny you didn't even mention Dr. Zoidberg, you know, like one of the most like lovable, always trounced on crab doctor men. I mean, amazing.
You got Hermes Conrad, who's just like the bureaucrat crazy dude doing paperwork, but is also like a world champion in limbo.
I was gonna remember the limbo episode.
Oh, it's terrific. All the characters add something a little bit special. You love every single person that's in that show. And I really think that if put in front of more people's eyes, people will be like, oh yeah, this is really good. But it really does get forgotten about, which is a shame because it's just really cool, really brilliant stuff.
So the 2000s really started the Adult Swim channel genre, the boon to success, and to, you know, many middle-aged suburban housewives, the deep controversy of Adult Swim with shows like Aqua Teen Hunger Force, The Venture Bros, Boondocks, Robot Chicken, the other Seth MacFarlane show, American Dad. And at the late end of this 2000s era was the start of Archer and the start and, you know, fairly soon after conclusion of The Cleveland Show. And just so many more. So first off, John, were you allowed to watch Adult Swim in this era? No, exactly. I eventually got Cartoon Network much, much later than like most kids my age had. I was with Nickelodeon for a long time, so I really couldn't physically watch it. But Mama Began was not really about adult animation shows in our household, especially how late it was. You know, that and Mama Began and I were too busy watching Prison Break or whatever, but like probably Prison Break. So John, let's get your take on vintage Adult Swim.
Definitely the only times I was watching vintage Adult Swim was when I was hiding in the basement from my mom really late at night trying to get a chance to watch it. Hardly ever was I able to. I did really love a couple shows, and I can say that the main one was Robot Chicken. And I can also say that watching it again as an adult a little bit, definitely didn't understand like 70% of that humor when I was watching it. Because now looking back, it is a pretty grotesque show. It still has incredible, incredible jokes. Actually kind of similar to the Family Guy situation I was bringing up as well, where they're going to just pummel you with like 800 jokes and you're gonna like two of them. Unlike Family Guy, it definitely pushes the limits a bit, so you can watch all the episodes now on HBO Max. So I was rewatching some stuff recently. Boy oh boy, it definitely still, for a show that pushed the boundaries, really has some rewarding things. And who doesn't love weird clay style animation people? I don't know, it's got its fun moments.
It's like a hardcore, like R-rated Wallace and Gromit. If the, I don't know if that reference is over your head or not.
No, that's exactly what it is. And they honestly probably made fun of Wallace and Gromit at some point.
They take swings. I can't say I was really ever big into anything on Adult Swim. You know, obviously I've known about Robot Chicken. Looking in this era, you know, we've already kind of, I think, talked it at fruition on the Seth MacFarlane shows. So I really wanted to get into the thing that inspired this episode, and with the timeliness of the latest season dropping as well, it's Archer. So I'm super familiar with Archer. I know you are too, but I was going to ask how familiar with it you are, but we know you're familiar with it. So let's just, what are your thoughts on Archer as a show?
Well, I'm going to take your supposed question and then flip it around and just fire a question back at you. Okay. Because when I think about Archer, as I mentioned earlier, I watched this like 5-6 years ago and fell in love with it. It was just an incredible show. But then I think as they got away from the spy stuff, but I felt like once they stopped being spies and they started going on more of these weird side storylines, it kind of just jumped the shark and I could never get back into it. Mm. But I've heard that it's really good since then. I just got lost during that season where one of the main characters becomes like a country recording artist and Pam gets addicted to cocaine or some sort of drug. And then I just didn't think it was the strongest season. I haven't gone back to it. So why should I go back to Archer?
For me, I love it. You know, it was my personal start to watching things that are like this. It's super witty, which I think a lot of things aren't on here. It's really dry humor sometimes. You know, I love the spy humor. They have a lot of really super obscure references. And unlike Family Guy, they're not cutaways. They're, you know, dialogue lines thrown right in there. You're not getting any visual representation. You're just kind of, you have to like pause it and think about it if you're watching on demand and see what did they mean when they made that joke? I don't get it at all. And it may be hard to even figure out what it means. I mean, obviously they play with the tropes of the genre. The Danger Zone is that's probably the most known. All the characters are amazing. All of the office, like dipping the quill in the company ink. The voice staff is, you know, H. John Benjamin, who is a phenomenal voice. And you've heard him from, I mean, Wet Hot American Summer, Bob's Burgers, Archer. I mean, his voice is very like distinct. Even the guest actors, John, the Anthony Bourdain episode was absolutely one of my favorite episodes. The show sports an 8.6 rating on IMDb, and I think it's super justified. If you like workplace comedies and spy things, the show is for you. I don't like my workplace comedies in general to be too relatable, so it hits me. Like, I don't care about friends hanging out or people in the office doing office things necessarily. I like it to be a little more abstract. So to get to your big question though, sorry, I had to get my main points out there, but things were a little wonky when, spoiler, like he gets in a coma and there's a couple seasons of random things happening. The season that you're talking about, the Vice season, wasn't actually the first of those weird seasons. Like the Vice season, I didn't bug me as much because it wasn't spy, but it still was like in modernish, like the world they were in. It's some like Hollywoodish story. He gets shot or something. I think it's like a modern day something. And then he's like in olden times. So, like the three weird seasons are like an old timey Hollywood thing, like a jungle adventure thing, and like a space like futury one. Those are the three like weird ones. And now he's back to modern times. So for starters, good news for you is we're going back to the spy stuff, which all the trailers and all the material, we're clearly back to Archer as we know it. I didn't necessarily love those three seasons. I think the first season with old-timey Hollywood, it was fine. The Adventure Island one got a little wonky. I did like that they made Cyril was like a, I think he was a Nazi, like scientist guy, kind of like in like the first Indiana Jones.
So Cyril was not Krieger?
Yeah. Krieger was always like an animal. He was like a parrot, I think. I'm pretty sure Krieger was a parrot in that.
Krieger's one. Like the mad scientist.
Yeah.
So that's weird that they made Cyril.
Oh, gosh. I can't. Well, it worked. It was interesting having Cyril. It worked, but like
Krieger was always. I'd like Chris Parnell is a Nazi. I think that that is so weird and so obscure that yeah. I think that could have some weird sort of life to it.
And I feel like those three seasons were like fine, but you're kind of getting through it. I know that Archer had like five or six really, really good seasons in the genre that I like. And okay, these are tangents and hopefully we'll get back. And thankfully we did. I think when I saw at the end of the sci-fi episode that he was like back to the world, I got re-excited for Archer again.
That's huge. I think that's so important because I can see why in the writing room you'd get kind of stale and bored of the jokes that you were making before. But once they just went in a totally different direction, it just kind of, it never felt right. So yeah, that definitely to me makes it seem like it's worthwhile to go back and get into. Because those first two or three seasons, man, that's some of the best
perfect
I've still ever watched. It's perfect. All the running gags with Burt Reynolds and his movies are just fantastic. Like it really is such a good show, but it just lost itself. So it's cool that it's kind of going back and reverting to, I think, what made it great. If it ends on a high note, that would be terrific. Or if they're able to really get it back on track and kind of keep it going for another couple years, that would be great too.
The 2010s, John, now we're in and Archer, you know, was right at the tail end of 2000. So the 2010s, you can lump Archer in there too, but this was really where I think a lot of the more unique and well-known things came out. Classics like Bob's Burgers, Rick and Morty, BoJack Horseman, Big Mouth. I mean, that's a pretty strong list right there. A good chunk of Netflix shows have had, you know, their moments, and I'd say they're not as good. You know, I don't know if you've seen F is for Family, Hoops, which just came out, and I'm like one episode away from finishing it, and the latest Matt Groening show, Disenchantment. I actually just watched Harley Quinn, which I talked about before on DC Universe. It's super dark, it's quite good, and it's a really unique take on the genre. I was actually concerned bringing this into the intro because I wasn't sure. I had to look it up. It's not an anime, but it's kind of a similar style. The darker video game adaptation of Castlevania, which is like, it's not crass, but it's super scary, super dark, and super gory. So it falls into the adult animated things. But with this list of good, there's a lot of bad. Or just, I won't say bad, we'll say average. I'm going to list one of the most known ones in the average category in my mind, like Brickleberry. And some people love Brickleberry, you know.
They should.
but for every, you know, BoJack and Rick and Morty, there's 5-10, you know, whatever, one season, two season animated shows that are just like cannon fodder.
Do you remember Pacific Heat? Cuz I don't.
What?
You remember Pacific Heat when that came out on Netflix? Cuz I certainly don't.
Pacific Heat?
That was the really, really bad.
Oh, it's like Archer, right?
Spin-off they tried to do. Ferociously painful to watch. I watched like an episode and it was bad. It was not worth it at all. And nobody else thought it was worth it, which is why it just came and died instantly. There's anyone on here listening to this that likes Pacific Heat? You're never gonna find another friend because nobody else likes that.
I you know, I might have watched the whole thing because that's how I do. I just say I have to finish it, right? And I thought you were talking about Paradise PD, which is like the other Brickleberry show that was on Netflix. I was like, what? I didn't even remember that show because it's kind of forgettable.
It's so bad.
I'm happy you brought it up because I'm remembering it. But that's just to show you. There's a lot of bad, average, whatever adult animated shows that exist. John, this is a ton of shows I gave. This was the biggest intro I have for you. But let's start with some of the non-Netflix shows. So, you know, I'd say let's ease into it with Bob's Burger before letting you really get out there in the world with Rick and Morty.
Yeah, I mean, Bob's Burgers, if there's a single show that I think's a very, very good show that one person can like sit down and watch with their family and all the adult animation shows, it's going to be Bob's Burgers. I mean, it's fun family love for everybody. The characters are extremely well built out and their world is really fun. I mean, Tina might be the most uncomfortable yet greatest character on television. Gene gives you all your fart jokes that you love. Bob is just a really sentimental dude, but is also really sweaty at the same time. There's just so many really good characters on that show. And it always, you always leave that show just in a very happy mind frame. And so with a lot of the other shows that I love on the animation side as well as on not on the animation side, it can put you in a bit of a pit of despair after watching it. So to end your night watching a nice episode of Bob's Burgers, leaving you a little bit smiling, happy, knowing that everything's going to be good, there's nothing better, man. It's a great show and definitely recommend.
When I think of Bob's Burgers, you know, it's a show that I caught up with on quarantine thanks to Hulu. It was one of those shows, like, you know, we talked about where you kind of, you get it in sittings, but you never really sit down and watch. So I kind of made that effort to sit down and watch. And I think, as you said, maybe that's why it was so good for this time, is because it is kind of feel good. It's the stakes aren't particularly high. You know, whatever the issue is, it either gets solved or like Bob just defeatedly accepts that it's not going to work out because his family is so terrible at working in his restaurant. But he loves them for all their odd quirks. You know, it's a little more simplistic of an animation style and a storytelling style, you know, as opposed to some of the more like real crisp, clean animation styles out there. Like, not everyone loves the character designs, I would say, in Bob's Burgers. You know, I think of all the family shows out here, you know, and I'll exclude Futurama from this talking point because let's go with the atypical family grouping. I think Bob's Burgers has the most, like, genuinely fun family grouping, you know, more than The Simpsons, more than Family Guy, for yeah. Sure. You know, H. John Benjamin is great. You know, there was an Archer thing where I think it was, he was like, he has a coma or a memory loss, and he was like cooking the family in the Archer style. I think just the music, like I said, Family Guy, the musical numbers are great. I mean, Linda's whole thing is like songs, and I love the every year the running joke of her trying to come up with like thank you for loving me, like the Thanksgiving Day songs, because they don't exist.
No, it's
and
true.
They could, I mean, and maybe they have, they can make a whole album of like the recurring like Thanksgiving songs she tries to make into songs. But like you said, Tina, best character, with her love of butts and zombies and like erotic friend fiction. It's so weird, but it's so good. And like at any point in your life, you can probably relate to someone in an episode, but it could be relatable, but not too relatable to make you like not have a positive experience relating to your media. But John, Rick and Morty, the big one, you know, where do you begin talking about Rick and Morty?
What's not known about Rick and Morty at this point? I mean, it just came onto the scene and was instantly the hottest comedy of any college kid's life. I mean, it's incredibly well done. The world, obviously based loosely off a Back to the Future style situation where you just fall in love with these characters that all hate each other, but also kind of love each other. Nobody's good. Nobody's important. Nothing matters. And that's why you just got to sit down and watch TV. And that is the crux of what Rick and Morty is. And it's the crutch of why everybody loves it. I don't think anything ever will happen in Rick and Morty. I think they will forever take the thought and theory of it doesn't matter. We want evil Morty to go out and do something. It's never going to happen because they don't want it to happen and we don't want it to happen. The point of the show is it's about nothing and to sit down and watch TV with your friends. It just accomplishes that and more. It's so great. And yeah, I can't recommend it enough.
Before I talk about the positives, we'll talk about the one negative thing, and it's just how long it takes to get to an episode.
It takes so long, but at the same point, just the crazy stuff that they're coming up with and just with how much it blew up, I can also see you wanting to fine tune and make it perfect. Like, I loved in the new season, the train episode. I just think these ideas on, like, they're philosophical based ideas and they're interesting principles that we've discussed in our everyday lives put into a really dumb, crass humor show. Like, it's really, really well done. And it is unfortunate how long it takes, but sometimes you gotta wait for perfection, man. I don't know. Yep. Sometimes you gotta wait.
I mean, for me, it's one of, you know, my favorite dark shows, not just animated, ever. A raging alcoholic scientist grandpa who has so many issues relating to anybody because of his intellect and his eager, puberty-ridden grandson, Morty. And they take aim kind of in the same way that South Park does at everything and anything. I mean, that train episode you brought up, it takes aim at narrative structure, overt product placement. And yeah, even in that episode, you know, they tease this thing that every fan wants of this epic showdown with evil Morty, and there's Meeksies, and there's that one alien race with the two arms coming out of their heads, like all the villains that you saw on this big thing, and they'd like just make it like a story about religion just to throw off the plot.
They're willing to go and combat themselves with really anything that people passionately believe about, because as Morty says in that one episode of Summer, in his backyard is his dead body. So this is just a new world that he's living in and nothing matters, and go sit down and watch TV.
Well, I always remember like that same line, but like in the, I think Vindicators 3, all the things apply to all of you. No one's special. That's Rick's point. That's always his point.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's a constant theme of the show.
And it's another amazing family cast of characters. And like, even though they have the quote, like traditional family hierarchy, like it's challenged so frequently and so often. And even this season ends with like the potential of two Beths. The power dynamic is constantly changing. So it has almost the guise of a atypical family setup, but there's always this like under the radar, like power struggle. We probably will end up doing a whole episode on Rick and Morty, hopefully joined by both you and our previous guest, John Butensky, to talk really in depth. Because even though if there's only four seasons, we could get into
so much into this
show. So much. But like, you know, like even when I just think of like the interdimensional cable episodes and how amazing they were, you know, with I'm ants in my eyes.
That's Johnson here.
Oh, I hope they're not too low. Like there's so many weird quotable things, and they really do play with like portraying depression in such a way that like it doesn't, and it kind of the same way that BoJack does, it doesn't like pull punches. It's like, here is it on full display, and like most characters face this issues in some way, but they combat that with like random musical numbers. So like you're always like a range of emotions in every episode. And like I said, this is something that we will for sure have to get into in ad nauseum at some point. We've talked about it a bit, you know, let's get on to the Netflix fair of things. And I think you and I are pretty clear cut. We like these shows both, but I would say you probably have a preference to BoJack Horseman, where I have a preference to Big Mouth. I feel like I'll let you take the floor with BoJack, and then I'll take the floor with Big Mouth.
Yeah, I'm fine to talk about BoJack. BoJack Horseman is just one of the best television shows made within the 2000s and 2010s, obviously. I mean, sure, you have basically two main human adult characters and the rest are talking animals, but you can just tell that there's something so profound about this comedy that it just makes you think about your existence, makes you think about life, it makes you think about how you treat people, it makes you think about what's good, what's bad, it makes you think if you're a good person. There's just so many things that you can connect to and relate with, while also just throwing out some of the craziest, funniest puns, just some amazing background humor that happens throughout this entire show, where if you're just watching what the background characters are doing, you can always find some random funny pop culture references, some really great hidden gems. And it's just so, so smart. I can't stress enough how all the characters are, they have really redeeming qualities, but they also have qualities that just make you question if they actually are good people. So whoever you relate to, whoever you identify with, you kind of have to start thinking more deeply about yourself. And I think that comedy has that ability, if people want to choose that outlet, to really discuss something and make light of something, but then bring it back and just make you think about yourself. And BoJack Horseman does that brilliantly. So if you haven't watched it, if you love watching a horse slowly drink himself to death, potentially. You'll find out if you watch the show. Please give it a chance. It's worth your while.
There's a big market for that, I think, for that specific niche. Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, BoJack definitely has some of those same elements as Rick and Morty. And obviously it's on Netflix, so it's almost a little more available than, you know, some people just don't feel like going to Adult Swim, but BoJack is right there for you. It has an interesting take on depression, you know, and it's almost more grounded, as you said, even with these half animal people. And obviously there is, you know, a nice cast of voice actors with, you know, Will Arnett, Aaron Paul.
And Allison Brie.
And it was funny when you're talking about the clever thing, quick sidebar. I do remember like Quentin Tarantula for Quentin Tarantino. Like that's always the name. Like, and they play with the names a lot. But kind of one of the interesting things about this show that it definitely doesn't like pull any punches. Like, I always notice, I get into a season of BoJack, right? So let's say season 2 or season 3 came out. I'm watching it. I'm like, oh, it's funny. It's always funny. And then it slowly, you had these hints, and then like on like a dime, it's like hardcore depression, hardcore sadness. And like, it didn't really, it kind of prepared you for it, but it really didn't. It's just sort of there, which like, I don't know if they did it for this reason, but like, it's kind of like depression in a way. Like sometimes it's just there, you know? And it's almost like a storytelling trope for the plot to like show an issue that people go through.
No, I think they 1000% do it. They set it up like that in particular, where a lot of seasons in the very beginning of the season, BoJack meets a new, really influential, usually female person that gets added to his life. And then from there, he kind of has like an uptick and he starts to feel like he's learning more about himself and discovering himself. And then within the middle of the season, something will happen that will impact his relationship with this new person. And in turn, he'll spiral into a state of depression because he's someone that really identifies as a whole with just trying to please everybody and anybody. And I don't want to go too deep into his character and how that all works out, but they definitely and purposely make it so these new people that get introduced into his life give him some hope that he can be a better person. And he always finds out, or usually finds out, that he needs to not focus on these other people making him into a better person, instead try to make himself into a better person. And who, this conversation that we're having, who would expect this to be a comedy? Like, who would expect anything like that to even remotely have humor in nature involved? And it has some of the most brilliantly written humor out there, as well as just these deeply thought-provoking feelings and emotions that I don't think any other show has ever been able to do.
And I would even say, and I was even going to just say humor, I was going to say, like, who would think that like animated shows in this time like would have such a deep impact on like, I know so many people who won't watch a show because it's animated, who won't watch a movie because it's animated, right? I'm not watching something animated. It's kids stuff, right? Like, you think of the Disney movies, I'm not watching that. It's for kids. And like, there's so many animated shows that are so weird and deep and thought-provoking and like impactful.
Absolutely. And I think you're going to start seeing more animated shows like that, because I think now you're starting to see the framework that's being built where shows can actually accomplish this. And with all the new streaming platforms, there's niches of audiences that they can build up that following if you hit on the right like emotional chord, you hit on the right characters, you hit on the right world. Because before, I mean, you look back 10 years ago and it's all like South Park, Family Guy, very crass humor.
Yeah.
You're starting to find and get a generation of this sort of animation where it's very thought-provoking. And even Rick and Morty, like, it's, you got deep, deep thoughts of, like you were bringing up before with like alcoholism and depression, that's very rampant throughout the entire show. It's still just brilliantly written into a comedy. And I think you're going to just start seeing a lot more of that within this genre.
I mean, it's a joke in Family Guy and it's a joke in Rick and Morty, but the difference is like the joke in Family Guy is it's destructive and like that's funny. Where in Rick and Morty, it's funny until it's not. Like, there's a turn in Rick and Morty where Family Guy won't turn. Yeah. And I'll go briefly into something that kind of, you know, it was a short-lived show on Netflix as well that had a similar animation style, like animals as people in Tuca and Birdie, which I was surprised that you also knew about, which has, you know, great voice actors in Tiffany Haddish, Ali Wong, Steven Yeun from The Walking Dead. And it did, like, this is, I feel like this happens a lot. I look for something and it appears, it manifests. I'm like, oh, Tuca and Birdie. Like, if I Googled that a little while ago, you know, like a few months ago, probably wouldn't have found anything. But it's going to have a surprise renewal on Adult Swim. So it's almost like that show is so great for, like, what it was, like an interesting representation of, you know, two platonic female friends and the struggles they go through also in this veiled comedy world that's getting a home again, which is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same animators as BoJack Horseman, which is why it has that very similar feel where it's based in an animal style world. But it's a show that Netflix never gave the opportunity. I mean, you hear that with a lot of shows that it's like the show had potential and Netflix just cut the cord. This is a show that has all the potential in the world to easily crack into my top five animation shows of all time if it does what I think it could do with Adult Swim, given that audience. It has an incredible female leading cast. The stories are very prevalent and just very, very funny. It has a similar feel to like a Broad City. And honestly, I think there needs to be more shows, especially in that animation style. It's not too often, or at least from my favorite shows, that focus around female-based characters. So it's really cool to have a show like this that gets picked up again. Hopefully it gets the following that it deserves, because it has a following. I'm following it on Reddit and people are posting about it every day. I mean, there were thousands of comments when it got renewed. Worthy of a show to be given that chance to succeed. And I think Adult Swim can take it to greater heights than it ever got with Netflix. Hopefully it's easy enough to stream and find it. I really think it was a smart pickup, and I'm really excited to see where that show goes, because there are some really, again, it's another one of those shows that has a lot of really funny, quick jokes, but also hits on a lot of really deep topics. Tuca and Birdie, I'm rooting for you. I can't wait for season two.
Fingers crossed, man. But for me, this is the big one. One of the best things to come out on Netflix, period. You know, we've mentioned Big Mouth before on the Emmy episode. It's a gem that, you know, I've said before too. This should be shown in health classes. Permission slip, ask for them, get them back. And imagine going through this time and having this show to get you through this time. I mean, that would be mind-blowing to me. Look, you know my barometer for good now. There's musical numbers galore. There's a whole album that I was listening to a half hour before this. I mean, my standouts are the Queen-inspired song, Totally Gay. The Valentine's Day episode in general is amazing. There's a lot of good songs in the Valentine's Day one. Jason Mantzoukas is in the Guy Town song from The League. Sex on a Lady is probably the best thing, which is Nick Kroll's character for Coach Steve, who is the best character and also my Netflix avatar. I love Coach Steve and everything he is. Like, oh, it's so good. The show itself tackles the awkwardness of growing up with real life issues during a terrible time that, like, you know, I'm sure, John, you do too. I won't ask you to delve into it, but we all have PTSD thinking about our awkward, like, growing up stages. And that's, I think, why it's so relatable, is because we all went through these just terrible, awkward times growing up. I mean, there's a couple of shows I rewatch on Netflix too much. It's this and the Scream, like, TV show. I mean, there's always a character that you can relate to. It either may make you think back on something, like at a time in your life, but there are still things that tackle issues for adults as well. And some of those issues of those kids growing up are also with issues that you were always going through. And it finds a way to be serious when it needs to be, but it's not like too depressing where like F is for Family and even BoJack are just a little too depressing sometimes. I mean, you could even put Rick and Morty in that too. Rick and Morty always remains depressing. The peaks don't go as up and down as much. And obviously, you know, Nick Kroll is the best from The League. He had his own show, The Kroll Show, as well. I mean, everyone in this show is great. I mean, John, I know it's my love and you like it, but tell me on Big Mouth for you.
So Big Mouth's a great show. Don't get me wrong. Big Mouth's a great show. But I just, I don't think I want to spend 12 plus years of my life in this stage. I don't think this show, for me personally, needs to last more than another season or two, which is probably going to crush your soul for me to say that.
They're announced for like 6 more seasons, I think, Sean.
Yeah, I don't know if I can watch it for 6 more seasons, to be completely honest, because like, how? Like, it's just so cringy remembering those times. And there is like the element of growing up, and that's cool to see. But like, man, like, you look at Jay's character and just, you just got to pray for that pillow every single day that it finds its way out of Jay's like hands. Like, this is just, there's just so many cringy situations like that where it like, it definitely teeters on the line of like, this is potentially way too real that like, I don't know if I'm comfortable watching it, but they're gonna take that step and that leap to get to that point, to make that humor, which I have a lot of respect for. But at the same point, just like, hurts my soul sometimes to watch it. So I can't watch it on repeat. I'll watch it like 2 or 3 times within like a year or two span. And like, it's like, all right, like, that's enough of this show. But it's so brilliantly written. Nick Kroll and John Mulaney are incredible specimens. Jordan Peele's character as Duke Ellington is amazing. And just the fact that that even exists is incredible. Fern Armstead as Nick's dad is also just great. Like, there's just so many great characters on a really well-written show. I don't know if I want it to last forever, because I don't know if I always want to remember those middle school years.
I feel like we talk a lot about the recent shows. It feels like everyone has their way to portray depression, right? And I love their physical manifestation of depression. And like, the line is like, it's something about like listening, and like, I don't watch Friends, but like listening to a Friends marathon, but like facing the other way or something. And it's such an image. I'm like, I do that. Oh,
I mean, the actual act of having the cat be the physical manifestation of depression was awesome. That was a really cool scene. It was really genius. They do a really nice job delving into some of those aspects, and that wasn't a direction I was 100% expecting the show to go into. So like, that was really, really well done. Very genius of them. I mean, they're really good writers. They've been doing it for years between Kroll Show and Mulaney on SNL. So it's not surprising to think that the writing's top notch on this show. So I hope that if, as they keep trying to explore this, that they can keep finding really new creative ways to show it like they did this past season. I think this past season was probably the best of the seasons that have come out so far, in my personal opinion. Still doesn't make it entirely 100% rewatchable. Still a little too cringy, but it was really good. And you'll see, it's in my list of top 10 for sure.
But to answer your question, I'll say this. I would love Big Mouth to go on for a long time, but I don't know how long it can go on based purely on the fact they're growing up as they, like, you know, the jump you saw, the, you know, in the beginning of season 2, when they're playing basketball, like, you know, the one kid's jersey, Andrew's jersey is smaller and Nick's has gotten bigger somehow. And like, you know, they're going through puberty. So eventually the changes are going to happen. And they even said, and you know, we'll talk on it later, like they have an interesting way of how they're going to change Missy's voice actor with her growing up. I just think like, remember when they tried doing Rugrats grown up?
Yep.
And like how, I don't really remember it. I just remember it was a thing.
Yeah.
And it was something that no one ever would have wanted, ever. Like, awful, awful decision. Like, I remember the Rugrats episode of them, like, growing up, but it was, like, just like a, oh, it was like a vision, right? It didn't actually happen, but that was, like, the soft lead into the show happening. And yes. no one ever would have wanted Rugrats grown up. And that would be my only thing. Like, it would have to end in high school, if that. Like, no, the end would be them going to college and leaving their town. That would be it. Or not going to college. I think that would be, you know, if something like in Mount Every character, like
Jay probably wouldn't go to college.
Jay probably wouldn't go to college, right? But I think that would be the hard end for me, would have to be right before going to college. And I'm happy that eventually they made Matthew like into the fold of like the 6 most important characters with like Nick, Andrew, Jay, Missy, Jesse and Matthew are probably the six, like, clearly now. You know what I mean?
And then
Matthew
really
was kind of an afterthought.
All basis of personalities, genders, race, sexuality. They hit on a lot of different topics, which I think is cool. And I think Matthew brought a nice addition to that. And his character is great.
Now, you know, I think we've gone through a good chunk of shows, but, you know, when we were talking before, you brought up some really interesting things. So we're going to go deep here, folks. You know, you want to talk a bit about, you know, kind of where the industry is now and how it's changed, not only based on trying to get equal representation in animated shows, but also with the impact of COVID, how that changes animated shows happening. And just kind of, I think let's start with anything you've noticed in your fandom of production logistics and how that may impact animation.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've touched on it a little bit throughout, but just to bring it into the main focal limelight, just because of COVID, you're not able to get as many shoots, not as many large groups of people are able to be together. So you're going to start seeing more animation, especially in this next year or two. I don't know all the projects. I'm not someone that does a ton of research into, like, this is what's coming out in a year or two or whatnot. But, like, we're going to start getting a lot more animation. I think, as I mentioned earlier during our BoJack conversation, there are these groundbreaking shows that are now really showcasing how much of a variety you can have in animation. And so we're going to start seeing a lot more of it. A show like Big Mouth 2 with such a diverse character range, with all different opinions on race and sexuality, these things are going to start coming out as it just becomes more prevalent within our society. And I'm excited for that, man. I think we need more of a voice from female comedians. I think we need more of a voice from Black comedians. Not even comedians, just animators. I think we need more of these lifestyles introduced. Something that is good for the industry is diving more into this animation style and these new worlds. And I think we're going to see a lot of really cool stuff coming down the pipeline.
What I kind of want to talk on is kind of, it's a positive boon for animation, but it's a hit for a lot of live action. I mean, when I think of, I mean, a show like Drunk History, which was, you know, such a unique show on Comedy Central that they were doing season 7, but they canceled it because they just couldn't get any more. You know, I think of, you know, a show like Empire, where they had all these things of all these characters are going to get killed off with Terrence Howard and Taraji P. Henson, and they just ended and everyone was still alive because they never could finish the show. I've been waiting for weeks, months for The Walking Dead season 10 finale to come out because it was done. They just never finished putting it together. And months later, it's going to come out. There's only so many shows people can grab. Like the CW is grabbing Swamp Thing from DC Universe to air like on TV in October, just to have something.
So we talked about equal representation as something that has had some big news, you know, not exactly recently, but recently enough, with Cleveland Brown actor Mike Henry and Big Mouth actress Jenny Slate both voluntarily stepping down from roles. You know, both were white actors portraying characters who were Black. There's this movement, right, to have animated characters voiced by people who are representative of them. Ayo Edebiri will replace Jenny Slate in the like penultimate episode of season 4, and they kind of have a way to, you know, make her grow into it, which is great. And so, you know, I know we talk about Big Mouth having all that representation. They are, you know, one of the shows that is, you know, swapping out Mike Henry with Cleveland Brown for years before this, before stepping down, but which is great that they are doing it. It's just such a strange thing to think about, but it's a important thing to happen as well. Like you know, you would think that it would just kind of be standard practice, but you know, it's not.
It's good that they're getting in the forefront and saying, hey, this is probably an issue that we should have thought about. It just makes more sense to have people that can actually portray them get those roles. And I think once you start seeing a more diversity in these roles and having a place at the table, you're going to start seeing a lot more creative comedies, and you're going to start seeing a lot more. And I know there are shows like The Boondocks that got it started years and years ago, and hopefully we're going to see a lot more new ones coming out that are going to include that diversity. Let's keep it going. Let's keep the wheels churning. Let's make change happen.
And John, you know, with you talking about Boondocks, you know, I think of Afro Samurai, and I don't know if that would be considered anime or not, but just, you know, there weren't a whole lot of shows that were like not white, male-dominated, heteronormal shows. And, you know, that's why even shows like you know, the Harley Quinn show, where, you know, it's a female lead and there's some LGBTQ relationship. Tuca and Birdie, which is, it's platonic, but it's two female leads. So it's kind of, you know, we're seeing those things, but those are also both very, like, recent shows coming out. And I, you know, and we really didn't talk a whole lot about Simpsons, but, you know, probably one of the biggest things, obviously, is the character Apu. They only, you know, recently not only stopped voicing that character, but the start of 2020, I think, nixed that character. You know, if we think the, you know, Cleveland Brown and Missy things are issues, obviously the probably the biggest, you know, like smudge on like animated adult comedies probably was Apu from The Simpsons.
Probably. I mean, that's definitely the one that they made a whole documentary on it. So it's got notoriety. I'm glad that we're kind of coming at this point where we're realizing it's time for a change. Let's not just play into these stereotypes and let's instead do the right thing. So it's cool, man. I hope we continue going down this path.
We're almost to the end here, John. We're almost to our top tens. But before I, you know, give you that, and I'll talk about a few shows that I wanted to touch on that we didn't really talk about. Is there any shows that you want to talk about before we get into our top tens?
Yeah, so it's less of a show and it's more of just a style animation. Like, we've talked a lot about comedy animations, especially today, but there's a whole style of narrative animation that I think is just absolutely fascinating and can make for some really great shows. But usually these narrative animations are centered in the children's TV show realm. Mm-hmm. So it's less of the adult everyday comedies, but more just some incredible world building, some incredible storytelling. The ones that come to mind to me are Avatar: The Last Airbender, which is one of the greatest shows on television, definitely like a top 30 show. Then there's obviously Adventure Time. There's a really quality one season. It's pretty much just a movie, but it was broken down into 10, 11 minute episodes of Over the Garden Wall. Just these shows that are, they have some comedy thrown into it, but it's really just storytelling, adventure building, world building, narrative animations. And if you're someone that is skeeved away from Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon shows just because you think, oh, they're kids shows, you shouldn't, because there's some really incredible ones. And I guarantee you that if I'd watched Gravity Falls, that has unbelievable reviews, that would probably be a top tier show for me as well. So definitely don't ignore something just based off the way that it's marketed or advertised, and instead listen to the reviews and what people are saying, because you'll find that with a lot of these shows, there's a lot of deeper meanings. It's not like a stupid, sorry for all the lovers out there, might hit a bad chord here, but it's not dumb child humor like a SpongeBob was or any of those childish things. It is adult themes, adult thoughts that are just portrayed in an animation style that's easy and friendly for kids. So give shows like Avatar a watch, man. It's worth your time.
I do like SpongeBob. Just sorry. Yeah,
it's a hot take. It's a hot take. It's just not my favorite. Yeah.
It's funny. I you know, there's two shows I'm going to talk about, but I actually thought of a third one and you brought it up and I didn't even like think about it. And it's the Star Wars Clone Wars animated series, which is, you know, it was a Cartoon Network show. It started off with an absolutely dreadful movie. Awful. Like, it's so bad and it has none of the same like tonal structures that the show has. And it, beside the fact that the show really has a good chunk of the story covered that you don't get to see unless you're reading the books like I am, because I'm a big Star Wars nerd. The show is, you know, it starts off a little cutesy, but it has some like really dark elements. I mean, I remember two things I can remember. One was from its original run on Cartoon Network, and one was from the recent revival final season on Disney Plus. So there is like a whole episode about like friendly fire and like the traumatic like nature of that. And it's a bunch of soldiers, the clone troopers, who like are being led by a general who they're, you know, blindly trusting, and this general is against them and has them firing on their own people, and they have to deal with coming to terms of like killing their brothers. And it's like, this is a cartoon show. And even in the latest one, there's a whole episode where the like revived Darth Maul, which unless you watched the movies, you would have watched Phantom Menace, assuming got chopped in half, and then watched a Han Solo story and said, hey, isn't that the guy who got cut in half like 3 movies, 4 movies ago? But if you watch the animated show, obviously you know what's going on.
and like he's like forcing a clone's arm through like a closing blast door, and it gets his arm like severed by a door, and it's like, wow, this is a kid show. And like it's not.
There's some really, in all the shows that we brought up, there's some really big adult themes just sprinkled throughout that you wouldn't necessarily think about, but they're usually just pretty well, I mean, getting an arm cut off is kind of crazy, but you know, normally it's very well sprinkled and like kind of hidden on the side. Yeah. But just, it's worth giving some of these shows a shot. You will be very, very surprised at how good they are. Well, for our top 10 list, I think we stuck mainly with the adult style shows, but yeah, definitely worth taking the time to watch some of these kid-friendly shows
too. Seriously. And I will say the two more I want to talk about are not, I kind of say like, you know, you had a genre, like the narrative driven thing. Well, the two shows I want to bring are not shows that you would think of. I feel like you think of this genre, you do think of your Family Guys, your Simpsons, your Futuramas, you know, Rick and Morty. Those are kind of the ones that you would think of. So the two that I want to bring up are one that feels like it should be pretty commonplace and one that's super different. So the show I want to talk about, DC Universe's Harley Quinn and the Netflix adaptation of Castlevania. They both strike different nerves. And for me, you know, the best of this style of show has gore, crass, profanity, or they're just dark. Crass is not always for me, you know, more so like they're gory, they're dark, they're kind of messed up. That's kind of my thing. Depressing, Nick. And, you know, you expect it from Castlevania, not being really knowledgeable about the source games to a T. It's a Dracula hunting game, and the show is likewise that. But finishing and starting Harley Quinn Within, you know, a few days before recording this, you know, I didn't expect it to be as much there. Castlevania is an amazing Netflix show that has some anime vibes, but it's a really amazing, heartfelt revenge story that has some great stances on, you know, humanity being the real monster, some like Game of Thrones political backstabby vibes, and there's some fun, lighthearted humor in there as well. And you don't have to know the source material to enjoy it, which is the best kind of thing. The main season does feel like it lasts two seasons. The fun does keep rolling into season three, and they're renewed for season four. I don't know where they're going to go, but you know, they've proved me wrong once, so I'm sure they can do it again. Harley Quinn is saying that I didn't want to bring superhero shows into this, right? Because I'm sure you could go on. There's so many superhero shows that are good. Like many adults love the 90s Batman show. It's a heartfelt thing, but I really didn't want to bring that whole world into this. Even knowing my bias, this is a show that's worth talking about, especially with our talk about representation and dark shows. I think it has to be mentioned. So it's a female-led show where a lot of it is about taking on the, you know, patriarchy of more so the like criminal world, but you know, they talk about the superhero stuff a little bit. It's super profane. Even the first episode's like surprisingly gory. But there's a really good, you know, LGBTQ storyline of romance. There's some interesting modern day relatable issues kind of wrapped up in a superhero cover. And there's, you know, if you're not necessarily looking for, you know, a more casual show and you are like a big superhero nerd like John Butensky is, there's some really good like DC fan service hits alike. It's almost like a Deadpool relatable style for all type of viewers, you know, where a superhero nerd person could watch it, but they probably could get their significant other or friend to watch it who's not a superhero nerd. And there is no, you know, announced season three yet, but it's a complete story and it's available on HBO Max as well as the DC Universe. So kind of like you said, there are shows that you may not think of, but hopefully between your and my top 10 list and what we've said today, we can enlighten some people and expand their views on what this genre is. So, you know, we've talked a ton on these shows, John. This is the tough part, especially because I'm changing my list on the fly for sure.
Oh, I did too. Oh, I definitely changed the list on the fly.
I'm going to do a little tweaking as you talk. So, John, are you ready to unveil your top 10 list for adult animated shows at this time?
Let's do it. So obviously, because the theme of this show is adult animation, these are my top 10 adult animation shows. If we're going to do anything pertaining to child animation or just animation in general, it might be a little bit differently tweaked. But coming in at number 10 is American Dad. Good show, quality show. Would have felt wrong leaving Seth MacFarlane off this list just for all that he's done in the animation world. So that makes it 10. Number 9 is Tuca and Birdie. As I mentioned earlier, that could easily just get into my top 5 if it continues to have success on Adult Swim. There's a lot of potential there, but for the time being, one season, can stay strong at number 9. 8's Bob's Burgers, very fun, a classic, so many seasons, good time. Coming to number 7, we're going to go Big Mouth, very crass, and but also very beautiful, great job at storytelling. Number 6 is Disenchantment, a show that we didn't focus a lot on at all today, but another Matt Groening show, his third show after Futurama and The Simpsons. Just really fun characters, another great world building. I think he's probably the best Notorious person for creating these just absolutely mind-boggling worlds with some really good side characters in it, and that definitely deserves a watch and to be on this list. Coming in at number 5 for the early seasons and a lot of love is Archer, just a terrific show that already brought up all the points. Number 4 is South Park. It just really holds a special place in my heart, man. That show is so good at what it does, hitting on political commentary while also just lots of poop jokes. Love me some poop jokes. At number 3, we go Futurama. Again, it's a cult classic, but just a perfect show. In a lot of ways, wish it got the love from the networks that it deserved. At number 2, which is tough, man. The top 2 are a little tough to debate between me personally. But we're going to have to go Rick and Morty for number 2. Wow. It's just so well done. It's so brilliant. The characters have a lot of potential, and it just, the theories and the science behind it are just really cool, and Dan Harmon's brilliant. So it's definitely a top tier show. But number 1, man, it's the darkest show that I know. It's the show that'll put me in a pit of depression for 3 days, but man, I can't stop watching it. It's BoJack Horseman. It is, in my personal opinion, not even in the animated TV show realm, but just in TV show realm, I would say it's my 3rd favorite TV show ever made behind Breaking Bad and The Wire. It is top tier writing, unbelievable, just the way that it makes you feel. And it really taps deep inside some emotions that you didn't even know you would have ever experienced or had if you don't watch BoJack Horseman. It just portrays depression beautifully. That's my number 1. That's my top 10. I'm very curious to hear what you've got to say about that, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the fans will ever be able to see the visuals of this, but I was writing my list. I don't like to handwrite things. I was handwriting my list at the end as you were writing because I was like under the wire almost. Great company to put BoJack in. And I love that Tuca and Birdie made your list. I imagine that wasn't on your list initially.
No, it wasn't. It's one of those shows that you kind of don't think about because it's just been so shortly lived, but if it's given the chance, I really think can thrive because there's some really cool scenes in that show. The character development between Speckle and Birdie is awesome. It's really fun. You love to see their relationship and the ups and downs that it has with it, and I'm excited to see where it goes from here.
And I know we didn't talk, as you said, a whole lot about Disenchantment, so I figure let's give it a little do. It is by Matt Groening. It's, you know, a medieval fantasy, but Disenchantment's fun. I mean, it's like, it's 3, we'll call them like losers, you know, who are banded together and become like stronger together, even if they're like not big or special in their respective worlds. I think sometimes Disenchantment may suffer from the like too dark for its own good thing. But I don't think that's a reason people should not. I think people should give it a go, especially if you like that animation style, because really it's been a long time since Futurama.
And they've made improvements on the animation. The animation is definitely stronger in Disenchantment than it was in Futurama. And the world building in that show in particular, it's just getting larger and larger and larger. And there's so many different directions that they can take it in. Part 2 was really fascinating with the direction that they took. So I'm excited to see where it goes from here, and I hope Netflix keeps pouring money into it, because it's definitely, it didn't get the quickest of positive reception, but I think it's going to start picking up, and I think more people are going to get into it. It's definitely worth a watch.
So just to throw this out there, American Dad was an issue in my top 10. It no longer is. And this list changed a lot. I don't think the shows changed, but the order super changed as we went. So at number 10, I went Family Guy, and it was way higher than that when we started. But I think as much as I love the cutaway gags, I feel like, you know, and this is tough because there's a lot of more modern shows on this list. I mean, I'm surprised Family Guy's as low as it ended up being. I put Futurama at 9, and also that's it's lower than I would like it, but I think some things I recently added back into it. Great animation style, super cool. It's a great run with great movies as well. I really liked Castlevania. It was so dark and so gory, and like it blended Game of Thrones and like, I don't know, maybe like Avatar. Maybe that feels right, because there are some really nice friendship things. It's just super dark. The political backstabbing stuff is super cool. It's so good, and no one's gonna watch it, and that stinks.
No, you made me interested in it. I honestly, it's one of those shows I've never even thought about watching, and I think I might pick it up soon.
I mean, it's going on to, like, people watch it because it's going on to a fourth season, but I wish more people would take the plunge, especially because video game adaptations have such a bad rep in any form of coming out of that genre. I just finished it. Number 7, Harley Quinn, the DC Universe show. It's such a beautiful, like, it's funny. I was annoyed and depressed at the end and throughout at times, like seeing the romantic relationships develop. I really don't want to spoil anything because it's super new, but it's super good. And it's some interesting takes on like friendships and relationships and platonic things, maybe not being able to be platonic things. And I mean, there's some good, you know, depression talk. And it's one of the few times where I feel like the abusive relationship of like Joker and Harley is like so clearly on display for being an abusive relationship, because it's her story, like not Batman's, not Joker. She's the main character, which is interesting. Number 6, I put Bob's Burgers, which might be a little high, but I can't, it's like you said, like you just feel good watching it. And like, I might laugh more at times at Family Guy, but even with the awkwardness of Bob's Burgers brings, it's just like, you feel good. Like you could easily like Sunday afternoon mellow through a season of Bob Burgers, and it's like dark outside and it was bright when you started, and like just nice, just a nice feeling with Bob's. Number 5. Wow. This is actually higher than I had it, but you're probably not thrilled with this, is BoJack. And it's pretty low compared to your standards. I figured my 1, 2, and 3 were pretty set in stone. It probably would have gone up. It was up to 4, but I was reminded of something that I almost didn't even talk about on the show. BoJack's great. I mean, look, 4 of the top 5 shows I talk about show some form of depression in a very good, unique way to the others. But I put Star Wars at 4, and I like completely forgot about it until recordings. I had no notes on it. I was just like, wow. I mean, there was a ton of seasons, and even though they had some production hiccups at the end of season 6 being a weird tack on, and they could have gone on for 4 or 5 more seasons. And like, unlike some things like where, you know, we say maybe Big Mouth shouldn't go on for 10, 11 seasons, Star Wars could easily have gone on. They had storylines like aplenty that just the network couldn't do it for whatever reason.
Are you considering Clone Wars as an adult animated show?
It's funny because your pre-list or your list, I mean, you Avatar was still on your list, right?
I took Avatar out of my top 10 list. It would have been in my top 10 list, but I kind of, as just this show was going along, kind of felt it wasn't as much adult themed. So I chose to just classify it as a kids show, and sure, I took it out. But I don't know, because I love Clone Wars. I don't even know if it would crack my top 10 still, but like, I would put it above American Dad, for sure.
I don't know if I consider it. It's tough because it's clearly a kid's show. Like, when I think of the rest of these shows, they're all, none of these are available on like a classified kids network, where that was on Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
But in my mind, and maybe this is so crazy, like technically it's a show about war.
The military strategy that is constantly talked about in that show, and it is definitely adult themed in that front. So like, yeah, I mean, it is, even if it's on Cartoon Network. That's how a lot of these shows are though, man. Like a lot of them, Avatar is very, very, very deep into philosophy and meditative states and things of that nature, just the balance of the universe, Adventure Time's post-apocalyptic society based. What else is on that? Over the Garden Wall has a lot of unique storytelling vices that it uses that it definitely tailors more to an adult audience if you target it. You can obviously hear the dog just coming to hang out and party a little bit with me right here as I'm trying to focus.
Number three is I put Archer on there, and I think kind of in the same way that you had it, I praise Archer for, you know, first seven, not the three where they did a time jump.
Yeah,
I love the spy comedy. I love the dry humor, and I love the inside jokes. It's the Family Guy model, less crass and more like consumable, I think, as my palate is refined in watching. You know, you can guess my top two. I actually, same thing. I took Rick and Morty, a show that I love to my heart, and maybe the better show, but I put it at two because I left my passion project show of Big Mouth at one. And look, we love Rick and Morty. We absolutely do. It's, you know, a very great representation of depression. The sci-fi elements are awesome, which is interesting that you probably did the same thing I did and unconsciously appreciate it because of Futurama.
Mm-hmm.
But the awkward puberty, you like your depression show, like locked and loaded in your face the whole time, where I like my childhood trauma awkwardness growing up as my neither one's like a healthy, happy-go-lucky representation, but that's what adult animation is, right?
Yeah. Your sadness. I mean, It just touches on themes that actually impact who you are as a person and hopefully who you strive to be. And I think both shows do a really good job of just exploring growth in who we are as we age, not only as teenagers, but as we age as adults. I mean, both shows definitely tackle just that mentality and lifestyle. So they're both great choices, man. I mean, there's a reason they're both on our top 10 lists.
Yeah. And I think that's an awesome sentiment to end on. First off, man, I just want to thank our podcast guest, John Mosho. You can check him out on Twitter and Instagram at JAMosho, MOSHO 998. There's some fun movie, pop culture things as well. Maybe you get a little more soccer than you would initially want. Or football, you know, for our international listeners, which we do have. I actually know we, for a fact, do have international listeners, so we can call it football as well. Nice. But who knows, folks? If you like what John's saying, follow him on social, and he'll definitely be back on this podcast. Who knows when you'll hear again, but it could be real soon. But speaking of social media, make sure to check out our social media on all platforms, either knickknack_IC, or Knickknack Movies. We have a ton of fun things going on throughout the week. You don't want to miss out. We're available wherever you listen to podcasts. It could be Apple, Spotify, Google, many more. If you want to, we'd appreciate it. John would love it too. Write us a review. Yep. You can rate us 5 stars. You know, really let the world know that this is something everyone not even should be, like they have to be listening to. It's the most groundbreaking podcast since, I don't know, Call Her Daddy, probably. Like, just throwing it out there, probably. But, John, anything else you want to say? Final wrap?
No, man. I hope you guys enjoyed. Thank you for letting me come on. I love to talk movies and media and all this stuff. So, I hope you guys enjoyed it. And, yeah, man, leave those reviews. They're super important. If we're going to make Knickknack Goes to the Movies hit number one on the charts, you got to leave those reviews. And hopefully you can write something funny, have a good time with it. And, well, I love to read them at some point, so maybe you'll find mine someday just trolling this show, but it'll have 5 stars, that's for sure.
That's the important part. That was John. I'm Nick. Until next time, cinephiles.
Are you not entertained? I think this is going to be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
I don't like goodbyes. Let's just call this see you later, alligator.